You!
What?
Listening to this podcast right now!
Me?
Do you want to hear a fucking podcast about anything and everything?
Yeah.
Like movies,
oh my
music,
God.
Television, and more?
Oh my God.
Well, you've come to the right place.
Yes.
Subscribe to Journey Into Comics Network, and you get Podcastrophy, hosted by me,
yes.
Dick. Why not throw a couple bucks to the Patreon? It's your
yes.
choice. Yeah. This is a Podcastrophy.
That sounds so awesome.
The following is a Journey Into Comics Network production.
Today on our show, do you hear that? That is stacks and stacks of news I'm going to talk about tonight. We got the Emmys, we have political news, we have weather news, we have Trump news, we have all this news in between, all this and more on tonight's The Poor Report. Hi there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 4 of The Poor Report. I am your host, Andrew Poor, and I want to thank you for joining me. Now, I had a prepared show that I wanted to dive into, but right before I started recording, I noticed an article popped up that I think is relevant news for anyone who listens to shows on this network. Watchmen is moving forward at HBO with pilot order. This was reported a few hours ago from The Hollywood Reporter. Says the premium cable network has also commissioned backup scripts as Damon Lindelof, I believe that's how it's pronounced, opened up the writer's room. So they have the pilot order, they're working on scripts, they've opened the writer's room. It looks like things are moving right along to get this off the ground. Let me see here. Here he says... about the new show, which he praised Zack Snyder's work on the 2009 movie, saying at the time that it's the most married to the original text version of Watchmen that could have been made. He says that he wants to keep it sort of insular. He said referring to multiple translations that have come from trying to translate the source material. He says, it's okay with me if people don't understand it because they don't deserve to understand it. Which is interesting for a show that's still going through the pilot phase and still kind of open up the writer's room. Really, if the show doesn't find an audience, it's not really going to catch on. I think they need to kind of ease into it. But I understand people who are going to gravitate to this show are also a fan of the comics, so they already have some foundation to go off. And with this November's Doomsday Clock, Superman tie-in with the Watchmen universe and the continuation in the DC Rebirth story, this might be the right time for this to go because it's created a renewed interest in Watchmen. So that's something I just wanted to jump into right away. So I guess with that, I'm going to dive into my show. And I want to thank you all again for listening. Episode 4, like I said, episode 3, I didn't really think I'd ever get here. A lot of things have had to move in the right direction, making this myself available to do this. And so I just wanted to kind of say thank you right off the bat. I want to jump in. I got a few articles I've been kind of gathering throughout the week, and it's a nice stack of like 18 pages right now, and I don't know if I'm going to actually get through all of it, but there's ones that I found that were interesting, so I'm just going to dive right in. Now, I don't know if many of you watched the TV show Seinfeld. It ran for quite a long time, and it had a very interesting finale. The finale was the pilot that they were that George and Jerry were working on got picked up, so they were being flown, I think, to Hollywood to start filming and getting the show on the road. And Kramer has water in his ears, so he jumps up and down, causes something to go wrong on the plane. So they land in this quiet suburban town out east. I'm not quite sure. Pennsylvania, maybe? Not exactly sure. And they're going, and they noticed a guy getting carjacked. And they kind of do nothing because they're New Yorkers and they're those four people. So, because it's George, Jerry, Kramer, and Elaine. And they just do nothing. They're actually filming it. They're laughing. They make jokes about the guy who's getting carjacked's weight. And then they get arrested. They claim, like, oh, I have no reason to do this. Why is this happening? And then it turns out there's this Good Samaritan law. And then the kind of goes where there was a trial and they get convicted. Not all that spoiler alert, but it's been like 10 years, almost 20. I think it ended in like early 2000s, maybe. Been a long time. So I noticed this article when I was coming across it. It said Germany convicts three for not helping an elderly man who collapsed. So the story is that an 83-year-old man was unconscious in the entryway of a bank in Germany. And then not one, not two, but three men stepped over him and walked around him to use the ATM. Now, a court has convicted the three of the men for failing to help the man, who had died a week later. The three were charged under Germany's Good Samaritan laws. The District Court of Essen-Borbeck said the three didn't help the man, although they were obliged to do so. So that's what reminded me of the whole Seinfeld thing. The court, in its statement, didn't name the victims or the defendants. The three have to pay fines ranging from $2,900 to $4,300. And I guess this whole duty to assist or Good Samaritan exists through Denmark and France and a lot of the European countries. There are no laws like that in the U.S., as it says in the article, due to the part of the fact the courts have consistently ruled that a person is not bound by law to help someone else, even if one would think it falls under the law of common decency. Many states do, however, have laws that protect people who render aid from being charged if their actions unintentionally caused harm to the person they're trying to help. So say, like, someone gets hit by a car and you assist them and end up causing more neck damage by trying to move them to safety or do something else. That's just something that will protect you. I guess one recent case that made headlines in Florida was when a group of teens taunted a drowning man while filming his death from afar. They were not initially criminally charged, but police later recommended to the prosecutor they be charged with failing to report a death just because they were sitting there staring at watching this man drown, which is kind of ridiculous, and I think they're rightly punished for that. So that was the article that, like, drew me in as I was looking. That's, like, the top of the list, because I kind of generated this list in order of the articles I found when I started looking at the beginning of the week. Another thing that kind of have a personal tie to is that Stephen King and his son, Owen, have a book coming out they worked on together called Sleeping Beauties. The book's kind of the short summary is, it's a horror tale set in a remote Appalachian town where women lie down to sleep and never awaken. Their bodies shrouded in gossamer webs, and as their sons and husbands and brothers soon learn, disturbing those mysterious cocoons come with consequences. Sounds like a Stephen King bit, and really Stephen King is probably riding high based on the astronomical success of the movie It he's been working on. He said here about working with the son, says, you cannot believe how nice it is to have somebody that you raised come to you and say, let's work together. Now, Owen King, I don't know a whole lot about. I know his older brother, Joe King, or how he goes by is Joe Hill, to kind of keep his distance from his father's success in writing. Him and his father have worked together, so it's kind of nice that Owen's finally able to collaborate with that. Now I want to get into the big, heavy. And for those of you who follow me on Facebook or Twitter, know that I spent all of Sunday night watching and live tweeting the Emmy Awards. I don't believe what year it was. It's been running for a very long time now. So it was hosted by Stephen Colbert, which I share a similar namesake with the show's title. It was kind of an interesting award show. I've never actually live tweeted before, so that was kind of an interesting thing for me. And I feel like, really, as those awards get going, it's really hard to keep up, because as you're typing a tweet for one award, the next award is being announced, and really your only saving grace is the commercial breaks. And even those had some commercials that I thought were pretty interesting, like the Audis, who were playing the Mary Tyler Moore theme or other classic TV show themes. So that was kind of nice to see. There were a couple interesting bits. One of the first ones was they had former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer come out on a platform similar to what Melissa McCarthy did on SNL, come out and claim, what did he say? This will be the largest audience to witness the Emmys, period, which is what he said on his first day as White House press secretary when Trump had him come out and claim that the inauguration audience was the largest that they have seen, the largest that the world has seen in its history, which many have proven false through pictures and all that. And it's kind of weird that now that he's out, he's been kind of enjoying the limelight of being now a personality more than a former White House administrator. So that was kind of interesting. I know a lot of people were upset on social media as well as in the room where it happened. I know it shouldn't make light of something that of administration that's had a lot of issues. But I think it would have been better served to have Melissa McCarthy do it again, something that she did a lot on SNL last season, and something that she was fully capable to do. I know she was up for... She won an Academy Award for Guest Actress, I believe, for that role. So that's exciting for her. Or maybe it was hosting. She won something for SNL. SNL also won a lot that night, but I'll get into that in a little bit. So I thought this was kind of interesting as I was going through it, is that of all the winners, only two shows were from like basic broadcasting networks, like not Hulu, not Netflix, not HBO, not any other premium cable show or network, I mean. So one thing I thought was kind of interesting is that of the two shows, one was Saturday Night Live, which had a pretty fantastic season, giving that their political seasons are normally higher rated and have more going on, but this one in particular was particularly newsworthy and had a lot of content to work with, so there was never really a dull moment on those on that season. The other show was This Is Us, which I believe is an NBC show, which was kind of a runaway hit. I've never seen it. I've heard if you don't cry while watching that show, you're heartless or something to that effect, so not really in any desire to watch that show. I'm not really big on those heavy family drama, sitcom type shows. Maybe not sitcom, maybe just a drama, family drama. Another thing about the awards that I thought could have been done without is that they had this comedian DJ person kind of cue up, like as they return from commercial breaks. He just didn't have good material. I don't know if he had planned ahead or not, but it just, I didn't think it was necessary. It didn't really do anything for me. Like, I know when Elizabeth Moss came up, she said she graduated from high school 2 years early. I read that on the internet. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense to me. I think they could have not had him and not, and it wouldn't have changed anything. Another big thing that happened at the awards, before I actually get to the awards themselves, is that they had a 9-to-5 reunion. 9-to-5 was a movie from the 1980 with Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, and Dolly Parton about three secretaries in this male-dominated office at the time when women were looked at as more subservient to men in those type of roles and were there more to be eye candy and weren't taken as seriously. I've never actually seen the movie, but I saw the play when the Beef House Dinner Theater, for those of you who are from Central Illinois or parts of Indiana, are familiar with, and that was a fantastic show, and I'm sure the movie is on caliber with that. So, and that actually landed Dolly Parton in hot water, because, well, Lily Tomlin, for one, is a lesbian. She's been on her entire career, and Jane Fonda has kind of been a thorn in a lot of political party sides and president's side, even back to when she was, I believe it was protesting Vietnam, and there was a big thing, and people just didn't really like her. And Dolly Parton has a lot of very conservative fans. She's a country singer. She's from Tennessee, I believe. So her being in a room with those two, while those two were kind of criticizing Trump during that little opening bit, she wasn't particularly denouncing Trump, but she wasn't defending him either. She was kind of trying to be funnier, and a lot of her fans were upset that they, because that she didn't directly denounce what they were doing, that she was, she should be penalized for that. And they talked about, like, they're not going to buy any more of her music, that it's going to cause Dollywood to collapse. People are just a little... I'm going to use the word triggered because I know they like to... a lot of very strong conservatives like to use that, but it doesn't take much to set them off, and then they like to use it and kind of throw it in more liberal people's face. And but I think it's the same thing with both liberals and conservatives, that depending on the situation, it's easy to get set off, and I think that's something that tends to happen. I guess with that, I'm going to get right into the awards. There were some big winners tonight, and a lot of this was because HBO's Game of Thrones was ineligible this year due to its air date. So there were no Game of Thrones nominees. It didn't win any awards this year, especially after, from what I've heard, so I'm not in season 7 yet. Season 7 was a spectacular season. And probably would have rightly won a lot of awards tonight. The cast, the effects, all that was bound to have caused a major contention in these awards. So since Game of Thrones was out, it kind of widened that playing field of what shows were nominated and what shows were going to win. And the big night went to The Handmaid's Tale, which is a Hulu show based on a book. It's kind of a dystopian world where fertile women are kind of, not necessarily enslaved, but they are taken, put in this like cult type situation where their only duty is to get pregnant, have babies to continue the civilization. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, I haven't seen the show, I haven't read the book, so I don't have a whole lot of information about how it really gets into it, other than the fact that they have these, white head coverings and wear these like red coats. But it kind of reminds me of Children and Men, where if you've seen Children and Men, it's like a dystopian show where there's I think the youngest person was like 20 and then he got murdered or something like that, so there's like no kids and people just aren't getting pregnant. And yeah, it was just a very interesting show, but I don't know if that's even similar to this. I haven't dived into it, but I think I might now. Elizabeth Moss stars, and I know there's been some guest stars, and I loved Elizabeth Moss on Mad Men, which is another great show that was on AMC. So The Handmaid's Tale was one. They won numerous awards, and Elizabeth Moss won. It won for drama series, which I think in the past few years has gone to Game of Thrones. And some other guest stars have won for that. Another big show was Big Little Lies, which is a show that's headlined by Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman. Another show I haven't seen. That was kind of how I was feeling through a lot of these shows. A lot of the winners were for shows I haven't seen, or a lot of the dramas were. So I really don't know a lot about Big Little Lies. They'll say it's kind of like a suburban community, Stepford wife-ish community, with a lot of infighting and all that. But apparently it's a really good show, and I'm going to have to check both of these shows out, which is going to be difficult now that fall TV season is getting underway, and a lot of shows I like are coming back, and there's a lot of new shows I want to check out, so it's mainly timing, so I might have to save those for like the winter break, when a lot of the shows are on their like month hiatus and before like the mid-season shows kick off. So let me look, see about these other awards. Like I said earlier, Saturday Night Live won a ton of awards. Atlanta won a few awards. Donald Glover won for directing, which I believe made him, he was the first African-American to win for directing a comedy, which is kind of exciting, and it's really been Donald Glover's year. Obviously, we know he's playing Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo movie. He had a part that's going to mean big things later in Spider-Man Homecoming. His Atlanta show's doing fantastic. He has his Childish Gambino rap albums. But this Atlanta, another show I haven't seen, unfortunately. I can't really dig deep into it. But I know he's writing it, I believe, with his brother. And it's about life in Atlanta. And it's apparently a really good show. But like, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on much on its content. Like I said before, another big winner was Veep, which... Julia Louis-Dreyfus won her, I believe, sixth Emmy for playing the main character on Veep, Selena Kyle. So that made a record for the amount. Sorry, my dog is scratching himself, which is shaking his collar. So jingle, jingle, jingle. He's still doing it. Thank you, Max. It's like every episode now I'm just gonna have interrupted by a pet. So awesome. But so Veep, for those who don't know, is a show about a female presidential candidate who loses and then takes on the role of vice president. And it's just her life. It's very office oriented. I don't think they even show the president once during that show. And then without really diving into spoilers for those, she eventually becomes president, and then there's more there, and it's going on. And it's actually going to be its last season coming out later this year, beginning of next year. That means after the show ends, there'll be another wide open race for comedy series and comedy actress and all that when Julia Louis-Dreyfus is no longer eligible. Just like Game of Thrones will be after 2 years when Game of Thrones is officially done and they're no longer eligible to run. Night of, which is also another show I haven't seen. I feel like all I'm talking about is shows I have not seen. Riz Ahmed, who you know he played Bodhi in Rogue One. He won for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series, and I think that made him the first, I think one of the first actors, I think of Asian descent, who has won an Emmy Award. So, a lot of firsts. Other big one was that Aziz Ansari and Leah Waithe won for comedy writing for the TV show Master of None, which is on Netflix, which I've seen. It's a pretty good show. It's it's more of a dark comedy. It plays a lot of life, but the past two seasons have ended kind of sad. But Lena Waithe was the first black woman to win for comedy writing. And she's also openly lesbian, and she gave a shout out to her LGBTQIA family, so that's kind of nice that they're now comparing this to the Academy Awards, which has suffered in recent years for being mainly white nominees. Now it seems that the Emmy Awards are ahead of the curve and offering having a wider array of winners. And I don't know if this is in... I think it's a lot to do with just the content that's coming out on TV compared to movies as of late. John Lithgow won for playing Winston Churchill on the Netflix show The Crown, which is a fantastic show. I watched it. I binged through it. John Lithgow looks really unlike himself. He has the hunched and retreated and the heavy nature of Winston Churchill in that voice, but really doesn't look like himself. He has the prosthetics on his face to give him those cheeks and like the jawline. So and he's coming back when the Crown does season 2, which I've seen the trailer for, and looks like it's gonna jump forward a little bit in time. They've cast JFK in that, so it's gonna jump forward to the 60s, so that'll be exciting to see. Let me see here. Big Little Lies, Handmaid's Tale. One thing that kind of surprised me, and this is for like the variety shows and like the news shows, like The Late Show, Tonight Show. Those were up for 2 awards, and both of them end up going the Outstanding Variety Talk Series, and I think writing for a talk show. Outstanding Writing and Outstanding Show both went to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which is another HBO show. I've seen bits of that show. It's a good show, but I really thought Stephen Colbert's The Late Show was going to win. He had a rough start when he came out to do The Late Show, when they announced it, and he was dropping his Colbert Report persona. So it was kind of... But since the election, leading up to the election, he's kind of been on fire. He excels at political news and doing political-centered pieces. So he was able to really pull a lot that he's done for the Colbert Report into this show. And I really thought he would have pulled off to win. And it was kind of interesting to see a host accept an award. But they made a funny bit out of it, him and Jimmy Kimmel. They kind of cut to them, I think, a few beats later, and they were drinking cocktails, and they were joking about how do you like there was some British cocktail, and they said it's dry, and I guess some people like it, and it's so good that it takes a week to make, because Last Week Tonight is an HBO show that airs once a week, and it's actually only, so it doesn't air like all these other late night shows that air Monday through Friday. So they really were kind of making fun of that and making a little fun bit out of it, which I think they had planned ahead in case Stephen Colbert or some of the other guys had won instead. I think that's a lot of what came up from those awards. A big thing that I found that was surprising was also that Westworld and Stranger Things both were nominated for quite a few awards and did not win. Stranger Things was kind of a runaway sensation. I think I shared an article about cast negotiations for higher pay for the young actors who didn't make a ton off of the first season, but a lot compared to for kids. I think there were like 40 or 50 grand an episode, which for a 12-year-old is a ton of money. But with the success of that, and with a lot of them getting acclaim, and with Finn Wolfhard doing It, which was also a big hit, they're probably looking to renegotiate. And I think I said in the article that with their nominations for the Emmys, if they win any of them, it gives them a stronger foundation in renegotiating and getting something closer to what the adult actors on Stranger Things are making. They unfortunately didn't win, so I still expect that season 2 is going to be pretty fantastic. If it's not, I would be completely surprised. But I think they're doing the right things on that show, and it's probably Netflix's one of Netflix's flagships next to House of Cards of their original producing. I would say that the Marvel Netflix shows are also up there, but since those are kind of tied to Marvel, they don't really have the same claim, but all the Marvel Netflix shows have been doing fantastic as well. But Westworld is a show I kind of want to talk about because I've started binge-watching it recently. I finished going through The Office recently for probably the fourth or fifth time, so I finished that. Then I binged through The Walking Dead in like 48 hours. It was kind of crazy. I mean, it's only like 16 episodes, and I had a weekend, and I just cranked through it, and it's a great show, and I kind of dug into it on Journey into Comics. I recorded with Nate a couple days ago, so I'm not really going to dive into it here, but I'm really excited for Season 8 now. But back to Westworld, I started watching that immediately after I finished The Walking Dead. It's got 10 episodes. I'm almost done, and hopefully I'll get caught up with that before a lot of the new fall shows take off. Westworld was up for a few awards, including Sir Anthony Hopkins. I feel completely awful that I have forgotten his name. It's been a long day at work, and I'm recording this at like 8:30. After kind of going through all this and highlighting stuff I wanted to talk about, and I may take a picture of this when it's all done to show all the articles. But those are kind of the big winners. They claimed after this was over that this was one of the lower numbered in terms of audience. I think it narrowly beat, or I guess did beat, it did marginally better than last year's show, which was the record lowest in terms of like the demographic of the 18 to 49 who would watch. And I can't say this is the first time I've actually watched the Emmys all the way through. Typically Sunday nights I'm busy, but I made time for this because I was going to do it for the show. So I guess really that's my kind of my wrap up point for the Emmys. Some other big stuff that had happened. I'm actually maybe before I get into this, before I get into like the political news, I'm gonna just wrap up entertainment. So I've kind of done a good chunk of that. Here's another kind of bit of Netflix news, was that Netflix asked a Stranger Things pop-up bar in Chicago to shut down using this really funny cease and desist letter that I'm going to read for you. It was unauthorized. They just made it. They made it look like, I think, the mom's house, you know, the lights stringed up with the letters. That's what they made it look like. And here's what they said. Danny and Doug, which I believe are the people who are running the bar, "My walkie-talkie is busted, so I had to write this note instead. I heard you launched a Stranger Things pop-up bar at your Logan Square location. Look, I don't want you to think I'm a total wastoid, and I love how much you guys love the show. Just wait until you see season 2. But unless I'm living in the Upside Down, I don't think we did a deal for you, with you for this pop-up. You're obviously a creative type, so I'm sure you can appreciate that it's important to us to have a say in how our fans encounter the world we build. We're not going to go full Dr. Brenner on you, but we ask you to please not extend the pop-up beyond its 6-week run ending in September, and 2, reach out to us permission if you plan on do something like this again. Let me know as soon as possible that you agree to these requests. We love our fans more than anything, but you should know the Demogorgon is not always as forgiving, so please don't make us call your mom." That's kind of funny. They kind of put it right into the world they're creating and just basically said, "We get it, it's cool, you got a good thing, but you didn't give us the okay. We could really slam down a lawsuit or some kind of legal action to get you to give us residuals or shut it down completely, but they're letting it finish its run, and then I'm sure there's probably going to be some kind of deal worked out in the future to kind of wrap that up." So that was kind of interesting. I'm actually, since I'm near Chicago, I really thought about checking it out, but I don't think I'm going to make it there before it ends in a week. So but I've seen pictures and it looks pretty cool. There's another big news that I think we also touched on Journey into Comics, and I think I shared an article about it. But this is kind of tangentially related to it. So, as you guys know, Colin Trevorrow was fired from Star Wars Episode 9 and replaced by J.J. Abrams. One thing I didn't know that I kind of learned through an article that I actually had found today was that J.J. Abrams actually has a deal with Paramount that he started in 2006, which basically gives them $10 million a year to develop projects for them. So it's been 11 years now they've been in, and now he's been pulled into Disney and Lucasfilm to make giant pictures with a large budget and a ton of money. Now it's going to be twice. And the CEO of Paramount, Jim Giannopoulos, I believe that's his name, isn't particularly pleased, and I guess I wouldn't be either. If you have a giant retainer on a director, writer, producer, and he's left to make two pictures that have made a competitive studio a ton of money, and you're like, why am I even paying you if I'm getting nothing in return? So I guess this deal runs through summer of 2018, and he'll still be working on Star Wars Episode 9 if they've even started filming by next summer. I guess he's upset because he hasn't made ton of content for him. He's made the first two Star Trek films. He's made Super 8. He's produced 3 Mission Impossibles, the third Star Trek, 2 and soon to be 3 Cloverfield films. I guess grossed the studio in total about $5.7 billion through his involvement. But compared to what the box office gross and all the everything that kind of fell from the creation of the, or recreating the Star Wars universe with 7, 8, and 9, plus the spin-offs, kind of opening that whole doorway, made Disney piles and piles of money. So, I know there's been talk of, like, maybe he was going to use legal action, but I guess what this article kind of summarizes is that fighting Abrams would have meant alienating the filmmaker and taking on major adversaries Lucasfilm, Disney, and possibly even Steven Spielberg, who isn't involved with Star Wars but has a long-term association with Lucasfilm chief Kathleen Kennedy and has taken credit for luring Abrams to helm The Force Awakens in the first place. So if Paramount tried it, he could probably get... there's issues with this contract saying that, like, Disney would have to pay him roughly, like, 7 figures to Paramount for taking their... taking one of their directors away. So it's interesting to see that kind of plays off. It's kind of just like, well, that sucks, but what are you going to do? So that's kind of it for my entertainment news. But one thing I found, I kind of jumped in. There's been a bunch of weather and political stuff this week. I know when we spoke last, Hurricane Irma was en route to hit Florida. People are still dealing with the effects of Hurricane Harvey. And there were a couple other hurricanes out. As I'm recording this now, there have been a lot more hurricane news. I know Maria made landfall in Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands were also kind of hit by Irma just last week, so didn't have a chance to even get back online before Hurricane Maria just rolled through. And I know Vieques, which is a small island off of Puerto Rico, my parents have been to before, and the eye went right over that island, so that it's been kind of a disaster. And I think right before I started recording, I double-checked, and it looks like it was a Category 4 when it hit Puerto Rico. The country itself, the whole island of Puerto Rico, is now 100% without power, and that the country has seen nothing like this since 1928. So it's massive. There's not a lot of information because there's no power, and there's not really much access to get down there to really get more information. So I'm sure that's going to come in development in the next couple of weeks. One thing I found kind of interesting is I got some... Before I kind of jump into this, I'm really praying for everyone who is dealing with this tragedy and still reeling with the effects from the last few hurricanes. So I hope everyone is doing okay. And you know, there's people there that are always thinking about you, and there's definitely people that are donating and trying to get resources to you guys so you can get back on your feet as soon as possible. I found an article sharing some rough number estimates of how much this has cost. So I guess Hurricane Harvey, the estimates coming in for all the effects from that, and it's coming in at $190 billion is the high, which would make it the costliest disaster in U.S. history. Hurricane Irma, which didn't do as much damage as they were anticipating because it kind of went west instead of east along the state, cost about $100 billion, which we take into account the U.S. GDP. It's about 0.8%, which is crazy. That's a lot of money. To put that into perspective... Hurricane Katrina, which was the costliest hurricane up to this point, came in at $62.2 billion. And if you go before that, Hurricane Andrew, which was another big hurricane, only cost $17 billion, but that was also in 1992. So I think you adjust for inflation, that was probably a lot more at that point. According to the NOAA's National Center for Environmental Information, the United States has suffered 212 weather and climate disasters since 1980 that have cost more than $1 billion. So that means each one is that has cost more than $1 billion, totaling $1.2 trillion in just weather-related emergencies that have required infrastructure rebuild and everything that kind of goes along with recovery from a major weather event. And I actually ended up in a conversation with a CEO of the company I work for, Parks and Corporation, about how the U.S. as a country doesn't really spend the money ahead of time to help prevent this from happening. They're more dealing with the consequences because in terms of our infrastructure, that we don't really spend the money up front to design and build just the great equipment that's going to prevent storms and everything from... Because, like, he was telling me about... is it not Denmark? It's the European country that... is it Holland? The Dutch. I think it's the Dutch. Because their whole country is under sea level. So if there's ever any flooding, it kind of just parts the place. So they spent a ton of money building these giant dams that they can kind of close at a moment's notice to prevent floodwaters from going in. And just they have all these other contingencies in place to prevent any weather-related events from causing them serious harm. And since then, they have had, since they've been built, they haven't had nearly any issues with weather-related events causing infrastructure shut down and costing them tons of money on the back end. So I think it's something that with how the weather's been going lately and the fact that we've had three major hurricanes this month, it'll be interesting if this leads to legislation to create some of these infrastructure. And I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out over the next few years. I guess with that, I'm going to dive into Trump news. And I guess before I get into the big thing, which was Trump's first speech in front of the UN. On a previous episode, I talked about how the cost for the Secret Service cost for protecting President Trump and his family has caused the Secret Service to kind of exceed their budget and their overtime and everything that kind of goes along with that. And the fact that Trump's 7 trips to Florida are nearly on par with what President Obama had spent on his 8 years in office with all of his travel. So that's kind of crazy that in not even a full year of Trump's presidency, we're already kind of at that cap that Obama saw in his 8. So which is just going to lead to increased costs, which will then probably go back to the taxpayer to help make that happen. But that aside, two people involved in Trump's current role as president are no longer under Secret Service protection. The president's oldest son, Donald Trump Jr., and his senior White House advisor, Kellyanne Conway, are no longer under Secret Service protection. Donald Trump Jr. did this because he was wanting more privacy because of the 24-hour security as he's traveling the world and doing all of his business dealings. I guess it was becoming more of a hindrance, which it's kind of weird because it was the same time as the whole Paul Manafort subpoena, and they searched and they found all this information in terms of their investigation. So it's kind of weird that it kind of coincided pretty closely with that. It might be not related, but I guess we'll have to see how everything shakes for us with the investigation that's being done. Kellyanne Conway, who we really haven't heard much of since the campaign, she's a couple bigger things that come up, but she's been mostly quiet, and I kind of like that because I'm not the biggest fan of Kellyanne Conway. I called her through most of the election that she was a spin doctor. She could take any negative bit of news about Trump and turn it into a seeming positive towards his base of supporters. So, yeah, the less of her, the better was good in my opinion. Sorry, I need a drink of water. So when I was talking this much, dries your mouth out. That was some interesting news that they've... And I guess comparing it to President Obama, Trump has 42 people on around-the-clock protection, including 18 family members, compared that to 31 who are under President Barack Obama. I guess a lot of that is due to that Trump has a 18 of which of those 42 are Trump's family members, and Trump has a large family compared to Obama, who just had the two daughters who lived at the White House and were in school for all of Trump's or all of President Obama's presidency. So that was kind of interesting that they no longer have Secret Service protection. One other thing. What's kind of big news that's kind of developing as we speak is that there's this Graham Cassidy plan, which is the new thing that's going in front of Congress to remove the Affordable Care Act, or as they would call it, Obamacare, which is what it's kind of been called since then. So this Graham Cassidy plan it proposes to distribute federal funding that's currently available under the Affordable Care Act directly to the states in form of a block grant. And from 2020 to 2026, states would receive a set amount of federal funding to be used at their discretion for healthcare coverage, but cost-sharing subsidies the federal government pays to insurance companies to lower the cost of some of the plans on the individual insurance markets and money some states receive to expand their markets would go away. So that's already not great. Then the 31 states that applied for Medicaid expansion funding under the Affordable Care Act would see that money rolled back and eventually cut off. Democrats say that says states with large Medicaid populations would struggle to provide coverage for their population. Spending on Medicaid would be done per capita, meaning the less populous states like Maine and Alaska, home of the two senators currently on the fence about the plan, might struggle to foot the bill. The plan would repeal two key parts of Obamacare, the individual and employer mandates the state would apply for, waives to alter what would count as an essential health benefit for insurance companies as they design their plan options. Also, it would call for Planned Parenthood would also face a one-year freeze on Medicaid funding, and they called it the worst ACA repeal bill yet. So a lot of people are upset about this, and I'm sure it's going to really try to push this for a vote to get it across. I'm not sure if it's going to pass. I think they're just going to keep passing it until something gives and they're able to pass it and consider it a win. And I know when that happens, Trump will be all over Twitter and be very congratulatory and then denouncing the horrible bill that was the Affordable Care Act. And one thing that I kind of touched on last, when we spoke last on, I believe, episode 3, was about DACA, which DACA was, I'm kind of forgetting what it was called, the Deferment Action for Childhood Arrivals. So what DACA is a... it was a bill that keeps basically the children of illegal immigrants safe from deportation because they weren't in control of their actions when their parents moved them as a young age to the country. As Trump said, he wanted to repeal DACA over 6 months, which would force the deportation of, 800,000 people, which is kind of ridiculous. So a lot of Democrats were pushing, things for these Dreamers. But then it came out recently that, some of the Democratic high leaders like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, they met with Trump, to discuss a deal, so to try and get this Dream Act passed, and they were kind of doing kind of some back and forth, and I don't think everyone particularly had like a winning point. But Nancy Pelosi was recently doing a campaign, not campaign stop, but was meeting in front of people to drum up support for the legislation, and there were a bunch of protesters who were saying that we're not a bargaining chip, that you can't use this for political favor, and I guess rightly so. They shouldn't politicized this issue to try and use it as a give and take with the Trump administration. So I guess with DACA and with what's going on with the Affordable Care Act and the Graham Cassidy bill, a lot of this is going to come out in the next few weeks, and we'll have probably more to talk about then. But I guess the big thing I also want to get into today was that Trump gave his first speech in front of the UN today, or I think it was yesterday. That's the time I'm recording it, kind of timey-wimey-ness. By the time you hear it, it would have been like a week ago. So, yeah. So Trump gave, with the speech, he gave his harshest warning yet to the North Korean regime, threatening total destruction if it continues its pursuit of nuclear weapons. He said, the U.S. has great strength and patience, but is forced to defend itself or its allies. We have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. He's also taken to calling Kim Jong-un, which is the dictator of North Korea, Rocket Man, and he said Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and his regime. Now, that's kind of I've never liked the fact that Trump likes to give people nicknames, and then he tweets about it, and it's just, I don't care who they are. They could be a dictator. They could be a convicted felon. Just call them by their name. It seems very informal just to give them a random nickname or call people losers. It's just something that kind of drives me insane that he has weird nicknames for people. Like, it's like the whole thing during his campaign with giving nickname calling with other candidates and all this and that. And I'm just frustrated. And that brings one thing. He tweets about all this stuff. And I pulled like three tweets that I found. These are all tweets that were sent last night. He said, Puerto Rico being hit hard by the new monster hurricane. Be careful. Our hearts are with you. We'll be there to help. That's a very presidential tweet, in my opinion. Sympathy for a country, for Puerto Rico, which being affected by a natural disaster. Then he says, a great and important day at the United Nations, met with leaders of many nations who agree with much, or all, in parentheses, of what I said in my speech. Still pretty presidential, good first day at the UN, met great people, they agree with my speech, some, or all, of which was stated, so still pretty eventual. And then he says, I was saddened to see how bad the ratings were on the Emmys last night. The worst ever. Smartest people of them all are the deplorables. So, those three tweets were all sent around the same time. Like, Trump just sitting there, like, 9 o'clock last night, just running through those tweets. It's like, presidential, slightly less presidential, bashing the Emmys, and the liberal Hollywood elite nonsense. And the whole deplorable thing, which goes back to something that Hillary said about Trump supporters, and that's really been dragged out. It's almost been a year since the election. It'll be, well, coming up beginning of November, so yeah. So, yeah, I just think that if I was Trump, I would just stop using Twitter. Or have my staff run my Twitter. And this is not even his presidential, this is just his personal Twitter. He has the POTUS Twitter account, but doesn't really use it. He prefers his Donald J. Trump, which is on his phone, and he just tweets at his leisure. And I noticed from looking through his, because I actually do follow him on Twitter, because it's interesting to keep up with what's going on, or what he says is going on. So he does retweet and like a lot of tweets that are about either things that are negative against Democrats, or Hillary Clinton, or Obama, and all of that. Or just tweets in favor of him. He'll retweet, he'll like him. He's a very social media happy president, but I think that's more of a curse than a good thing. It's really going to show that, like, for years and years after he is no longer president, and after we've had two or three presidents since then, that Donald Trump will be the Twitter president. He'll be the president that was probably the most active on social media, and I'm sure the presence, it's probably going to even come up during, like, the 2020 debate, if Donald Trump is still president and is still wants to run for a second term. I have a feeling this whole Twitter thing is going to come up as probably a big topic during a debate, and I think that's kind of ridiculous. Twitter's a great thing to connect people and to get people news that wouldn't otherwise go to it, but having it to just rant or just push your agenda is kind of disingenuous to what it means to be president. You should really just be using it to be presidential, because you're president of everything. Just because you dislike something, you have to be the bigger person, because you are our president, whether half the country likes it or not. So I think he should stop using it, to be totally honest. But I know he'll never do that, because he likes the self-gratifying nature of it. The fact that he could send something out and get 30,000 likes in an hour. Like, that's something that probably feeds his ego, which we all know that he has. So I guess that really wraps up my news section of the show. And I'm going to dive into one thing I planned on talking about. No, I'm just going to save it. I'm going to cut this little chunk out. There's a lot of news I wanted to get to. I wanted to talk about The Walking Dead. I did that on Journey to Comics. I talked about Westworld. I did that. There's a lot of new shows that are coming out this fall that I'm really excited for. The return of all the CW shows, I'm sure, is going to be talked about a lot on this network, because Blaine with Podcastrophy and Nate with Journey to Comics and I are all really into those CW shows, so I know we're going to talk about it a lot. I know when The Walking Dead comes back, Nate and Brandon are going to talk about it a lot, because they love The Walking Dead. I know for me there's a lot of new shows, and I actually just got an app on my phone called TV Time, which tells me when new shows are going to air, keeps up with the schedule, shows what is competing. I know tonight, as I'm recording this, The Good Place is coming back for a second season, and I really liked that show. Last one was a neat idea and version of like The Afterlife, and it's made by the same people who made The Office and Parks and Rec, which are both really good shows. I know Gotham comes back tomorrow. Orville, I've seen the first episode. It's really funny. It's I know when I first saw it, it was Seth MacFarlane is basically making Star Trek, and I was thinking it was going to be Family Guy in space, and I saw the pilot. I missed Sunday's episode because it was airing the same time as the Emmys. You really can't do two things at once, and I haven't got a chance to get back to it. But I really liked it. It's a little bit more serious than I would say, like, Galaxy Quest, and more serious than probably the original Star Trek series. But I think it's funny. I'm definitely going to probably keep up with it this season as it airs, because nothing else I'm really into is I kind of lost the thought on that, but I really like it. It's got a good cast, and it's funny, and it still doesn't focus on the slapstick humor. The effects look good, the makeup on the alien creatures look good, and I'm really happy to see where this goes. I guess really with that, that's really it for me. My mouth is dry. I'm kind of sick of talking, but I really enjoy engaging with you and able to kind of share my thoughts on these topics. So thank you for coming to JourneyToComics.com. This show's going to go up early because I'm recording it a few days before it actually goes live. So if you want to listen to it in advance, you can listen on the Patreon. But I guess if you're listening to this now, just look for future episodes. I'm going to try and get them out always a few days before they air. This one probably be up sometime on Thursday, which is, like almost a week before. So I encourage everyone to go to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/JourneyToComics. Listen to a lot of the other great shows on our network, like Podcastrophy, Journey to Comics, which is the flagship show, Foodies Watching Movies, which we're recording another episode this weekend, which by the time you listen to this would have been last weekend. So all the fun stuff that comes to recording a show in advance. There's also Journey to Wrestling, Butt Stuff. I'm sure I'm going to be missing one, but Game Addicts Podcast. All these are on JourneyToComics.com. They all air at different times throughout the week. But there's definitely a large backlog that you can check out, so I encourage you to do that. Then I just want to thank everyone for listening. I'm going to have to clean up this podcast a little bit because I kind of ended up rambling, but That's the joy of doing a podcast. You really never know what you're going to get, and how it starts is never necessarily how it's going to end. So I'll be back with episode 5, and thank you again for listening. I am Andrew Poor, and this is The Poor Report.